Amateur Traveler, Episode 76. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Vietnam.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh, no.
15-hour flight, oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Normally at this point in the show, you'd hear the broadcast news fanfare, which would announce that this is the news segment. I'm going to put that off just a few seconds here because I have a lot of new listeners, and I want to give you just a quick overview of how the show is arranged. Generally, there's the introduction, and then there's a section from 2 to 5 minutes about news, about travel news from around the world. And then there is the main section, a story usually about a particular place. And that is often an interview. And then after that comes a section on internet resources for travel, and then a section with news and community. And that's usually where I hide the information about any contest we might be doing, and we are doing a contest this week. And that's also where I have play calls that I've received or emails and give you a chance to also contribute to the show. So that's the general overview, and now on to the news. I did a story a few weeks back about top 10 travel destinations according to Frommer's. Today I want to add on to that what Yahoo Finds and Yahoo Travel people are actually booking travel for. So their top 10 list, they have two, one for domestic and one for international. Top 10 domestic locations, Las Vegas, Orlando, New York City, Honolulu, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Los Angeles, Tampa, Phoenix, and Fort Myers in Florida. And the top international searches, these are the searches again from 2007, are London, Cancun, Mexico, Frankfurt, Germany, San Juan, Puerto Rico, Manila in the Philippines, Bangkok in Thailand, Paris, France, Rome, Italy, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and Amsterdam in the Netherlands. We've done a show about several of those places, but it looks like I still have my work cut out for me to give you a show about all of those so that you can get ready for your trip. Second news story for day from an article from USA Today. With the many number of people who are traveling with their BlackBerries and iPods, there's an increasing need for people to recharge in airports, and some people are turning it into a business. There are a number of airports now that are going to be fixed with a device coming from a company called PowerPort, which is out of Orange, California, and that basically they're going to charge you $3 for a 30-minute charge, long enough to replenish most of a cell phone's batteries. And there have also been devices that I've seen that basically look like big vending machines, and what they're vending is power. So you road warriors might want to keep an eye out for those opportunities to recharge. And in the final news story, if you happen to be visiting New York anytime recently, and you're on the subway and you come across an unattended bag or cell phone, you might think about leaving it where it is, or at least turning it in immediately into officials, because there is a sting operation called Operation Lucky Bag, where the police leave a bag or item in the subway to see who takes it. If it is not returned, the person who found it is arrested and charged with petty larceny. So keep that in mind if you happen to be in New York City anytime soon. As always, you can find links for all of those stories for more details either on the show notes at amateurtraveler.com or in the iTunes enhanced version of the show. I'd like to welcome to the show Adam and Allie, who've come to talk about a trip they took recently to Vietnam. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So why Vietnam? What led you to that relatively remote part of the world?
Well, we were looking for an interesting destination to go to for our honeymoon, and I had originally wanted to go to Greece, but once we realized we'd be going during the summer, we decided Greece wouldn't be the best place to go because it would be too touristy and too hot, and we were really just looking for somewhere interesting to go, and Adam suggested we go to Vietnam. It took a little bit of convincing me that Vietnam would be a good idea, but Adam was really gung-ho, and once we started doing some research, it really seemed like a great place to go.
Now, I think probably other people have some reservations. So what were your reservations with Vietnam, and how did he overcome them?
Well, my biggest reservation was the fact that my mother kept saying, you don't want to go to Vietnam. Everyone in my generation tried their hardest to not go to Vietnam. Why would you possibly want to go?
I do think, though, that we'll probably be having the same conversation with our kids in 25, 26 years when they're like, come on, let's go to Fallujah. It's supposed to be rad, you know? And, you know, say, you know, back in 2006, people were not so hip to doing, you know, adventure travel in Baghdad or whatever. So, I don't know. I think that's just sort of a generational paradigm.
When we say you did Vietnam, you did quite a lot of Vietnam. How long were you there?
We were there for about 2 weeks, and we really did the entire country. We flew into the north and went down the coast and ended up flying out of the south.
Yeah, Vietnam is about the size of California, so when you're taking the country, there's two ways to do it. You can sort of do a circle, or you can go end to end, and so we did end to end, and it was almost like driving from the top of California to the bottom, except this is a country that doesn't really have one particular road that's great all the way through, so you sort of have to either take real windy roads or do a combination of car and airplane, which is what we did.
Okay. Let's start with, what was the highlight of the trip?
I think the highlight of the trip was going to the site of the My Lai massacre and actually meeting two survivors of the massacre, and we really got to, you know, talk to these women. I mean, they didn't speak English, but through our translator, we got to talk to these women and, you know, hear some of the story of what they experienced and how they lost their entire families. And it was just, it was really sad and, you know, a big piece of history that I think a lot of people just don't get to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's this little remote place in the middle of Vietnam. They have a monument there and, you know, you can take a tour of the village as it was. But there's not very much tourism there, and these women are very poor. They still work the land that they've worked for, you know, the last 50 years. And, you know, we got to meet these women, and, you know, we gave them a little money, and from, you know, we gave them a couple of dollars, and it fed them for a couple of weeks. So It was kind of nice to be able to help out people like that.
Interesting.
It's such an odd location because it's only a stone's throw off of the main highway of the country. It would be as though a huge massacre had happened just mere blocks from a United States freeway. And so it's not like this remote mountain hamlet or anything like that. It's just a small village located off what has been a main road for, from what I understand, centuries. These people, these old women, these two or three women that are still living there, they're living there sort of out of a sense of solidarity with what was, you know, once their normal, prosperous village. And to them, this land is, you know, it's all they know. Why would they live in another village? Sort of like a ridiculous thought. And so that's why they're still there and just, you know, sort of barely eking out a living.
Now, obviously, a lot of Vietnam used to be that way or is still that way in terms of the real agrarian society, but it's also a country in real change. I think, as you mentioned, that was something you noticed on your trip.
Absolutely. In the main cities, I mean, you know, everyone's on cell phones. There are a ton of internet cafes, and you can see kind of the young people are really getting into, you know, looking at computers and getting into business, but you go 20 miles outside a city and there are rice farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a country absolutely in the middle of change. People
really
are finally getting used to tourists, I think, which
you'll see
for a long time there weren't any tourists there.
You'll see like an internet gaming cafe that's completely filled to the gills, people playing normal video games as they would be in Tokyo or in Seoul or even in New York or something. And then you'll walk two blocks down the street and might see someone like a elderly person urinating in the street. So it's really kind of popping on both ends. Like it's still very, very much in transition.
What was the biggest surprise?
I think the number of mopeds. you know, people don't really drive cars very much.
Mm-hmm.
Their cars are really, really expensive there. The Vietnamese government charges 100% tax if you import a car.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you buy a car for $20,000, you actually pay $40,000. So everybody drives mopeds. And, you know, you walk on the street, and I think we have a couple of pictures of just the streets filled with mopeds. And I've never seen anything like that before.
I was sort of surprised by the real emulation of Western materialism or the sort of the ascendancy of materialism with the lack of any sort of customer service ethic that you would find in, like, say, Japan or even what's becoming more prevalent in China. And so it's odd to see, you know, advertisements for really luxury Western goods like SUVs, but the whole notion of like sending back a dish of food at a restaurant that's not good or complaining about a hotel room that's you know, not right was misunderstood, or the typical response would be, it would be interpreted if you're complaining about something that's below your social standing or below your social station and you want something more expensive, which is not how that would be interpreted in a Westernized nation.
Oh,
so it's sort of a weird split.
I think it was also really interesting to me how different people were in the North and the South with their attitudes towards Americans. People in the South were very excited to see us, very excited to find out that we were American. People in the North, especially in Hanoi, didn't particularly like the fact that we were American, and we didn't publicize that because still the center of the communist regime, and they're still very bitter, which I kind of understand.
Interesting.
Vietnam is also sort of waking up right now to the notion of preserving its own history, which is something that until a couple years ago was relegated just to the political realm, in that the only history that the Vietnamese were trying to preserve was like erasing, you know, the non-ruling party's political history and showing the great political history of whoever's in charge. But now they're starting to turn back to like things that are more naturalistic, or like we went to this Champa ruins, which were sort of high up in the hills. And these are ruins from like 900 or 800. You know, these things are, you know, a good 1900, 1800 years old. And just finally they're getting roped off, and, you know, there's signs that are like, hey, please don't throw garbage on these and don't touch them with your bare hands. Like, this is, we're trying to preserve this. And it's really nice to see this going in this direction. And hopefully, archaeologically speaking, Vietnam will be a real treasure in the next few years.
You covered quite a lot of ground. First of all, was it too much ground to cover in that short a period of time?
If we went back, I would skip the North. I do think we didn't get to see enough of certain things or spend enough time in certain places. So, yeah, I would actually either have a longer trip or a shorter or a smaller amount of space to cover.
And what would you focus on? What was a real highlight? If I were to go to Vietnam, what would you recommend? Spend more time there.
Ho Chi Minh City was amazing. Mm-hmm. There's so much to see, and the people are just fantastically nice. There's amazing food. We didn't get to go see any of the tunnels. We didn't get to go see a lot of war memorabilia just because we only had 3 days there. But Ho Chi Minh City was absolutely fantastic. It's just, you know, kind of bustling metropolitan city. And it's a fantastic place. I would skip Hanoi, although Adam, I think, may disagree. I didn't like Hanoi.
I thought it was interesting.
I thought it was too crowded, and the people were not particularly nice. And, you know, we were just kind of interested to see everything, and they kind of, you know, take you around, and, you know, there are things you have to see, like the mausoleum where Ho Chi Minh is, and Ho Chi Minh's house, and everything is very much about Ho Chi Minh when you're in Hanoi. So I certainly enjoyed, in terms of the big cities at least, Ho Chi Minh City rather than Hanoi. There is a fantastic city called Hoi An, which is about halfway between the North and the South, which is this cute little village that wasn't really touched by the war at all. It still has these great, you know, cobblestone streets, and they don't allow cars in the center of the village. And there are all these, you know, just shops and fabulous food. And so that was definitely another highlight going on.
Yeah, there's a few cities that we did skip over. We didn't go to Da Nang, and we actually skipped. We had planned to go to the Mekong Delta way down in the south, and we skipped that and spent extra time in Ho Chi Minh City. The further south you get, there's generally a warmer reception towards Americans, whereas if you're, say, Australian or Canadian, I think the reception is sort of equally friendly. I mean, one thing you have to remember about the Vietnam War is Australia and New Zealand were not involved, or at least not nearly to the degree.
One thing we found that was incredibly interesting was I didn't know that New Zealand actually gave a lot of aid to Vietnam during the war. So New Zealanders are just welcomed with open arms. And people, you know, in certain places were like, oh, are you from New Zealand? And I had no idea that New Zealand had really, you know, stepped up and sent a lot of medical aid and a lot of food to Vietnam during the war. So that was something that was very interesting to find out.
You practiced your New Zealand accent well for your trip?
Exactly.
I actually got a pen pal. We stayed one night sort of unexpectedly in a town called Ki Nhon. It was actually one of those towns that was sort of founded by Kiwi money. It's a little bit north of Nha Trang. It's on the coast. It's sort of like shaped like a peninsula. And it's one of the first cities when you're getting into sort of the central or the southern part of the country. But it's not very far from where sort of the American base of operations was in the early years of the war. So the region is not entirely all that friendly. But I was stopped in at a New Zealander bed and breakfast, and I met a Vietnamese college student who spoke really great English. And so we've been just emailing each other periodically. It's really cool to have a pen pal over there.
Now, Ali, you mentioned that Adam liked Hanoi better. Adam, what did you like about Hanoi better than Ali did?
Well, both Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh have a bit in common in that they're both very crowded and very sort of off the rails, just sort of like every night is like Saturday night or something. But, I mean, Hanoi is definitely quite a bit more squalid. It has less westernized infrastructure, but Hanoi has also never been a western city, whereas in Ho Chi Minh, you feel a very tangible pulse of what was once a western city. You can almost, walking down the street, if you shut your eyes, you can almost visualize it in the early 60s.
Or even in the early 70s, as an American city. So that's, it's something that you really feel, whereas Hanoi feels a lot more, honestly, like China. It's much dirtier. But it's also, you feel this French colonial effect in both cities. There's just a history in Hanoi that's incredibly rich. The street map in Hanoi is actually rather French, and just the way the city's arranged. I did think the food, actually, in Hanoi is really excellent, though. I really liked it quite a bit. It's definitely a very different attitude, the two cities. But I thought, for all of its, failings, Hanoi was very beautiful. It's got this gigantic river going through it. We were also witness probably the most intense rainstorm we've ever been in our lives in Hanoi. And just being able to be on the sixth floor of a cafe right across from the water puppet theater, looking at the city getting absolutely drenched in a downpour. We're talking like, 6-7 inches of water in like an hour.
Oh, my.
Surreal. There's also this thing in Hanoi, there's a neighborhood of shops. The shops are arranged by what street they're on. So, if you're an iron trinket maker, you're like on iron trinket maker street. And if you're a spatula maker, you're on spatula street. And so there's like about 30 or 40 of these little streets in this small quarter of the city. And it's just kind of neat that toys are sold on Toy Street. So it's kind of cool.
Interesting. You mentioned food. Now, I'm not sure that a lot of people know that Vietnam was French Indochina, so there's not just an Asian influence, there's also a French influence.
Huge French influence.
What did you like? What do you recommend?
Well, the fact that you can have a sandwich at any time of day, even breakfast, that's great. And the bread in Vietnam is, I'd say on the whole, it was as good as the bread I've had in France or in Italy, like everywhere.
Yeah, basically, they don't use any preservatives in the bread.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bread is incredibly fresh. I mean, it goes bad after a couple hours, but
wow.
The bread is just fantastic. It just tastes, really kind of organic and fresh. And the bread was actually a highlight, which I wasn't expecting at all, because I don't think Vietnamese food and good bread just doesn't really go together. But the bread was amazing. We tried a lot of, delicacies. There were in Hoi An, they have these dumplings. They're called rose dumplings that were absolutely fantastic. The food in the north actually tasted more like Chinese food, given how close it is to China.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got things that you would normally expect in Chinese food. The food in the south was just absolutely fantastic. Yeah, as I said, the bread was amazing. Kind of anything, wrapped in rice paper or wrapped in, kind of dumpling was fantastic.
Interesting.
One thing that we did is we spent a night on Ha Long Bay, which is just a gorgeous bay up in the north of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent the night on a boat. And what they do is they catch fresh fish, and you basically have all the meals of fish. So we had, fish for breakfast, fish for lunch, fish for dinner, but it was some of the freshest fish I've ever had in my life, because it was basically, taken right there and then cooked. So that was definitely a highlight in terms of food as well.
Well, and I wanted to bring up that those pictures that you took, and Ali, I get the impression you're the photographer here.
Yeah, pretty much the photographer.
That are just gorgeous. That looks like a particularly picturesque part of Vietnam.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. You go out on the water. We actually ended up having our own boat with a cook and someone driving the boat, and we went on the water, and they have all these karsks, which are kind of these, little mountain-type things that are in the water. And you just, go along the karsks, and there's a place where they dock, and it's kind of like, a boat campground, because there are all these tourist boats just hanging out around there, and we got in kayaks, and we're just able to kayak along the Kursk, and it was, I mean, the water was, you know, the bluest water I'd ever seen, and it was just very natural. And yes, it was quite touristy, but nothing like we would experience in this country. You know, if you had something like that here, there would be hot dog stands along the beach. One thing that was really interesting, though, is they have these boats that these women are on these boats and they're trying to sell you things. So, you know, they're like, ooh, like, do you want like an apple? Like they'll come up to you while you're on your boat and they're on their boat. They'll try to sell you things.
Interesting.
I went out on the deck at maybe 6:30 in the morning. I was having a little trouble sleeping. I'm just sitting there quietly reading a book about Zen Buddhism, and some lady comes by in a boat holding a carton of Marlboro Lights. It was just sort of like, what are you doing here? And why are you up so early? Go back to bed. It was pretty funny. But yeah, being on a boat like that and having fresh fish caught and cooked for you every meal, it's pretty luxurious. It's great.
And when you were describing the Karsks, it really is this pillar of stone that's coming out of the water here that you're anchoring by.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really, you know, picture a mini mountain. That's what it is every 100 feet.
Hmm.
And,
sounds
you know, when we went in the kayak, when you're in this big boat, you can only go, you know, along the ones that have huge spaces between them. But we went in kayaks and we were able to kind of go in little crevices and just go around these things. And they're absolutely stunning.
Hmm.
There's also an anatomically correct rock named Penis Rock. And it's one of the funniest naturally occurring things that it's sort of like a natural practical joke, and it's out on Ha Long Bay.
And there goes the clean tag.
I wasn't going to mention that one.
That's all right. And in terms of natural beauty, that looked like one of the most beautiful places you saw. Anything else stand out in terms of natural beauty?
Well, they have all these relics from, you know, I don't even know, the 1200s, from when there were all these kingdoms there. And the thing that's amazing about these, you know, again, just in contrast to westernized countries, is that there aren't really gates set up so you can't touch them. Like, you can pretty much climb on these relics and touch them, which was a really cool experience for us, but they're not going to be there in 100 years because people are, you know, rubbing their hands all over them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fantastic. You could see all, like, these kingdoms that were built and where people lived and just go in and look at them. So that was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I really was fairly impressed by the natural beauty of where the Champa ruins are, which is sort of a bit in from the coast, not quite up and far up in the hills as a city like Dalat would be, which unfortunately we didn't get to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But the Champa ruins are, I guess, at an altitude of probably 2,000 feet or something like that. It's definitely, there's such a quick contrast when you're on the beach and you just get in the car and drive, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes up the hill. It's really, really different. So it's as long as you know you have a vehicle, you can really see both sides of Vietnam.
What do you wish you'd known before you went?
To have completely, completely different expectations as far as Western customer service norms. Like, this was our honeymoon, and so we decided to sort of, okay, we're going to do it 5-star. But by the end of the trip, we had sort of changed our mind and gone with backpacker accommodations so we wouldn't be dissatisfied. And so there's, I feel at the sort of 3-star, 2-star level of travel, there's a lot more value, a lot more bang for the buck in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're paying for a 5-star accommodation, you're simply, I mean, yeah, the exchange rate's really competitive, but you're probably not going to get what you want unless you're in like a major city, not unless you're in like the Trang or Ho Chi Minh City. That's about it. Other than that, you're better off doing sort of the hostel route and staying in, you know, inexpensive places and just sort of seeing it on the ground level and not trying to live it up.
Allie, anything that you wish you'd known before you went?
I guess I wish I would have known about the real level of poverty in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many children begging. You know, you're sitting in Ho Chi Minh City in a cafe, and these little kids come up to you trying to sell you cigarettes or a pack of gum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you know that they're kind of street kids that are really getting pimped out to go sell these things. And it's just really sad. And, you know, when we got back, I looked, and there are all these organizations to save the Vietnamese street kids. And I think it's somewhat unlike other countries where it's really just children that are out on the street begging. And it's just incredibly sad.
Hmm.
I guess I also wish I had known to pretend to be from New Zealand. Because
bring your Kiwi sweatshirt next time.
Exactly.
I wish I had also known about the level of unintentional humor in their signage. I remember we were staying at one hotel, and we actually have this sign of rules for the swimming pool, and among them are it's just and they're all like well-intentioned pool rules, but this one line that says the drunk is not allowed to swim at the pool, and just kind of makes you think, is there one particular drunk person that keeps coming to the swimming pool that they want to keep out of the pool?
A lot of their kind of translations into English look like they ran it through one of those internet translators. And it is using, I think, the same grammar in Vietnamese. It's just kind of word for word translated. And it's definitely a lot of unintentional humor when people try to translate things into English.
I mean, Vietnamese language is actually rather formal and rather polite. And so when a lot of it is translated verbatim into English, it can sound a little bit blocky and overly formal by you know, sort of modern Western standards. The culture is polite like that, though. So that is, you know, on the whole, Vietnamese people were super nice. And it's somewhere that I definitely would want to go back and actually kind of see other parts of the country that we didn't get the chance to see this time.
Now, Vietnamese as a language is notoriously difficult with seven tones and all. Did you pick up any Vietnamese before or while you were there?
Well, Adam tried to pick up some Vietnamese, and he, you know, learned a couple words, but it was quite funny when he tried to speak to people in Vietnamese and ended up kind of using hand motion. His hand motion for cook was particularly funny. He would kind of take his finger on his lips and try to make a sound of boiling, I guess, and kind of go, and nobody knew what, and, you know, said, say the Vietnamese word for boiling, but nobody actually knew what he was talking about.
This miscommunication resulted in me eating some dragon fruit and pineapple at a restaurant that was evidently not boiled, and that sort of sidelined me for a couple of days.
Oh, no.
Westerners can't really do the fresh fruit and veggies thing in Vietnam.
Yeah, I mean, definitely piece of advice to anyone who's planning on going to Vietnam, if you are going for, you know, less than 2 weeks. We spoke to people who had been there, you know, for months, and were okay eating the fresh fruits and vegetables, but Adam got incredibly sick.
One thing that we can tell people is counting to three is mok, hai, ba, and ba is, you know, the number three, and if you put three ba's together, you get ba ba ba, which is probably the best value in beer in Vietnam. So if you can just remember ba 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 lemon, that means give me a ba 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 beer, please.
Oh, another thing that's really interesting there is beer is most definitely cheaper than water.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So you can buy a huge bottle of beer for the equivalent of like 30 cents, and you can buy a bottle of water for the equivalent of a dollar. In some sense, they're charging Western prices for water because they know all the Westerners need to drink water, but beer is cheap and good and plentiful.
As you looked at the tour books before you went, what did they recommend that when you went there you thought, this is a disappointment, just skip it?
I'm really down on Hanoi, but just Hanoi in general just didn't really do it for me. But we were, you know, very pleasantly surprised by Ho Chi Minh City. I think the Lonely Planet tour book is awesome. It's the best one we had, and we used it. Our copy of it is now yellowed and ripped.
I think that also might have had to do with the temperature being like 105 degrees of all time.
And humid, I would imagine, too.
Yeah, you're pretty much walking around with a 1 liter bottle of water at all times, and if it's not full, you're having a headache. But after a day or two of headaches, you sort of get in the groove and just realize you don't go anywhere without that bottle of water.
Anything that the tour books didn't recommend that you stumbled across and was people shouldn't miss?
The site of the My Lai Massacre is definitely mentioned in the tour books, but not stressed as much as I think it should. I think it's incredibly important both for kind of historical, just to kind of know what happened there, but also just to see it. It's in the tour books, but it's not really stressed. I will say the restaurant recommendations in some of the tour books are excellent. In a city where you don't know where you are, nobody speaks English, and you need to find somewhere to eat, you're going to do what the book tells you. And we really lucked out with our random choices of which restaurant that the book told us, but we really lucked out with our restaurants in terms of, you know, going from the tour books.
There was also a restaurant I did remember the city, Quang Nai, which was a little bit north of Quy Nhon, and Quang Nai was sort of the base of American operations between 65 and 66, even going into 67. And so it was sort of the town where a lot of American soldiers were stationed, and a lot of kind of field actions took place from there. So there's a lot of really heavy resentment of Americans in that one town in particular, because it was sort of like colonized by Americans for 3 or 4 years. But we drove into town, and even still, the reception was a little chilly. But there was one restaurant where we had chicken with rice. It was called Kom Ga, and it was one of the best meals I've ever had. And we took a picture of the owner, and we can actually get the name of the restaurant, so we can include that.
I think it was called Mimosa.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe Cafe Mimosa. And it's in the Lonely Planet book, but the place was really quite great, and he was very excited that we were from the United States, and he was very kind to us, so that was really neat.
Any final recommendations for people who are going to Vietnam?
Pack really light.
Okay.
We really lucked out. I mean, you know, we kind of thought about it a lot before we went, and I was originally going to bring a suitcase, and we ended up just kind of bringing a backpack. So pack really light, and you're going to sweat a lot, so, you know, pack stuff that you can sweat in because it is hot and humid there. I would spend more time in the central and the south. Nha Trang is kind of this, you know, very touristy, beachy area, which was fun. We went, you know, I think we stayed there a little too long because we were there for about 3 days, which was enough partying and beach. So I would definitely go to Hoi An. If you want to go to relax a little, that's the place to do it. Oh, and if you get a massage, and they say there's no tip, that's not true. They're going to, like, beg you for a tip, which was actually a little surprising. When there are huge signs saying, no tip, no tip, and then pretty much they don't let you leave until you tip them, like, $5, which was pretty much the cost of the entire massage.
Also, there's a massage institute run by blind masseuses in Ho Chi Minh City. That place, on the other hand, was incredibly reputable, very professional, and they train blind young adults from all over southern Vietnam to give them self-sufficient jobs, and it's a really cool place, a good place to support. It's right by it's in the backpacker kind of region of Ho Chi Minh City, right by the main park. It's listed in most of the guidebooks. I think it's called Massage Institute for the Blind, and it's a really reputable place. It's sort of fun.
Well, I thank you both for coming on the show and telling us a little about Vietnam. Obviously, I'll take some of your pictures and put that in the enhanced version of the show, the iTunes version of the show. But thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks a lot, Chris.
For those of you who thought Adam's sound quality changed partway through the show, that's my fault, and you weren't imagining things. We'd actually recorded this as what's called a double ender, where Adam was being recorded locally while Allie was coming in through Skype, which is how I was connecting to them, and I did not realize that Adam had sent me 2 files, and so I only got the first one and wasn't able to reach him today when I needed to put this show together. My fault if for the quality of that part of the audio. In the Internet Resources part of the show, I have 2 different websites for you, and both pertain to packing light, as Allie had mentioned in the interview. The first one is onebag.com, and that is, as the name suggests, about the art and science of traveling light. So check out onebag.com for what to pack, packing lists, how to pack it, what to pack it in. And then the second one is a similar site called smartpacking.com, which is a site about a book about packing and how to pack better for trips by packing less. In the community portion of the show, I'd also like to remind you that we still have the contest going on, that if you write a review of the show for iTunes, for the enhanced version of the show, and submit that to iTunes and then send me an email saying which review is yours, I'll enter in your name for a chance to win an Amateur Traveler mug, which I'll award at the end of February. So far, there are no entries, but there are some new reviews, and that was enough to push the show into the top 15 shows and therefore a featured show for iTunes. So thanks you very much for those of you who did write a review, even if you didn't enter the contest. I got this voicemail this week.
Hi Chris, this is Abdullah from Turkey. I really loved the conversation and the episode about Turkey. It was very helpful, and I hope it will help plenty of people who are willing to visit my country. And I just wanted to ask if you can do an episode for Bulgaria, especially Sofia. Thank you very much. I appreciate your work. Have a nice day.
Thanks for the kind words. If anyone has been to Sofia in Bulgaria, I have not been, and so I would need some help with that episode, but I would love to do an episode about that if someone will give me some firsthand experiences. If you also would like to leave me a voicemail, there are two ways. One is to call the comment line at 206-MOM-LOVE, and the other one is to go to the website, and there is a gizmo halfway down on the left-hand side, and that's what Abdullah used to leave this voicemail, and he recorded it directly from his computer. If you aren't already tired of hearing my voice, I would suggest you do two things. One, seek professional help. Two, go to the announcement section of the discussion boards at amateurtraveler.com/board, and you'll see I've announced two different interviews, one an interview of me and another one a panel discussion that I took place in at Macworld, and those interviews have gone up on the web, so if you want to find out more information about me or about the show, check out those interviews, and again, that's in the discussion boards in the announcement section, which is amateurtraveler.com/board. And while you're there, leave a comment about your favorite travel destination. One comment that I got this week that I particularly enjoyed was about a trip to Turkey, which I am planning, and I'll put a link here in the iTunes Enhanced version of the show, but I had asked a question about, does anyone have any suggestions what I see, and I got a wonderful response from Kadri giving me suggestions about where to see in Turkey. I won't try and read it because it's a very long and helpful post, but that's the kind of information that the discussion boards have been set up to provide. And that should about do it for this week, so write a review on iTunes or send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.